debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. I want to get into Ron DeSantis, and they just changed the way that they're calculating COVID deaths down in Florida. So the Miami Herald headline, Florida changed its COVID data, creating an artificial decline in recent deaths. It's getting weird in Florida. We'll get to that in just a moment. But right now on the line with us is Dr. Eric Feigelding. He is the formerly a faculty member and researcher at the Harvard Medical School and Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, currently an adjunct senior fellow with the American Federation of Scientists. He is an epidemiologist and health economist. I follow him on Twitter, Dr. Eric Ding, E-R-I-C-D-I-N-G, D-R-E-R-I-C-D-I-N-G, or FA Scientists, and FAS.org, the website. Dr. Feigelding, welcome back to the program. First of all,
thank you.
Before we get any farther, I mentioned to you on the phone off the air that there is this National Institutes of Health, NIH.gov's link. It's a place where they publish publications that seems to say ivermectin is wonderful stuff and it'll save the world from COVID. And I've got people emailing this to me. I'm getting it in Twitter. I'm seeing it on Facebook all over the place.
Yeah.
I sent you the link. What the hell is going on here with this? Forgive my obscenity.
Yeah, that's a very good question. So first of all, the NIH website years ago for open access purposes double archives many journals, and these journals are either famous journals or no-name obscure journals that normally you would never see in the medical literature. And so what people are seeing is this duplicate archive of this other American Journal of Therapeutics, which I've never heard of, publication. And that's what they're seeing. It's not like a NIH study. It's not NIH endorsed. It's just a duplicate archive for open free access purposes that the government instituted years ago. But also the problem with the meta-analysis is, A, it doesn't include the largest, newest randomized trial, I would call the Together Again trial, and it includes one of the fraudulent studies, the El-Ghazar study from Egypt, which found like basically 90% efficacy, which, by the way, in the world of drugs, nothing is 90% efficacy. Only vaccines are, and the vaccine's not exactly like a traditional drug. So it includes that, basically. Some people are saying outright fraudulent study. You can go read about it if you read and search the El-Ghazar fraudulent study. And they included that study. So if you include that fraudulent study, of course it swings it down to the beneficial range. And they excluded the larger study, the Together Again study, which found absolutely no effect, which, again, one of the largest trials ever. And just so you know, in the other studies, they also found like some benefits for some of the other drugs, but not ivermectin. So there's not some systematic reason that they're that these results are finding a null result. It really is a null result for ivermectin.
So this is like a hustle. I mean, you know, they say right out, right at the beginning, we did a meta-analysis of other studies, but then they don't go on to say, you know, one of those studies didn't show any result for ivermectin, and the other one that did, that we are now citing all the details of, has been withdrawn because it was fully fraudulent, and the entire world has disavowed it. They failed to disclose any of that, and then they drew all these wonderful conclusions, and because this got cloned onto the NIH site, it's all over the internet.
Yeah, to some degree, it got cloned on NIH, and people are misled because they don't understand how these medical research database works. But, you know, the meta-analysis reviews what was published at the time. So at the time, it included the Elgazar, which has since most of the scientific community has completely disavowed it. I'm not sure if it's fully retracted yet, but it's been disavowed and been debunked by many sources. And the newer study, which happened after they published, wasn't included.
Right.
So, first of all, science updates, you know.
Yeah.
We know that there's asymptomatic transmission, you need masks, that the virus is airborne, all these things that, you know, there was controversy early on, but the science updates. And this is why you have to really follow the latest science and be very careful of some of these articles in no-name journals. Like, anyone can theoretically find a reason to cherry-pick studies and publish in a no-name journal. Honestly, there's been so much research fraud and research, you know, a controversy of selective cherry-picking that this kind of stuff happens all the time. It's also with industry study. Industry, whenever they do meta-analysis of, say, sugar or red meat, they always toss out the studies that does not appeal to the industry base. This happens all the time, and this is why you have to look at reputable journals, and you actually have to look at the reputable experts on this, not just any random analysis on the internet that is cloned on the NIH website.
Totally get it. So, what we originally asked you to come onto the program about is this new festival variant, they're calling it, from this 53,000-person event. And now there's another variant, a new COVID variant that has been detected in South Africa, apparently the most mutated so far. What is the state of things? Is there any risk, given that this is a SARS virus, that it could at some point mutate to resemble the lethality, the potential to kill of the original SARS virus that, as I recall, was around 50% fatal, or the MERS virus, the Middle Eastern respiratory syndrome virus, that is also a SARS virus that is, as I recall, in the 20% range. Correct me if I'm wrong on any of my memory here.
Right.
That a concern that if we don't get the world vaccinated, or at the very least the United States, we could be looking at something that becomes much more deadly? And what's the deal with these latest variations?
Right. The new variants, these variants are still emerging. The festival variant, some people are saying, is a subtype of Delta. It's still Delta, but a subtype of Delta that they're not necessarily worse than Delta. It's just that they could tell it came from the festival because it has that, you know, unique subtype signature. Right. That basically they know it came from the same place because of the similarity. That one's not as worrying. It is Delta, and it was a super spreading event, but it's not as worrying as the South Africa's new C.1.2 variant. That variant is the most mutated so far. Basically, of all the variants, this is the most genetically distant from Wuhan 1.0 strain. It has mutated the greatest distance, and is mutated and arrived there by mutating at twice the rate of the average variant that's out there. So it basically had a sudden jump in mutations, and we think it was because of some immunocompromised person that probably gave the virus extra practice time to eventually evolve to that state. But it means that basically there is this acceleration of more and more variants that are jumping further and further away from the original strain. And all our vaccines, and if you were infected in early 2020, your immunity was adapted to the old Wuhan strain, which means likelihood of greater reinfection. There's also some signs that it could be more infectious. There's lots of troubling mutations in that C12 variant, which doesn't even have a Greek name, but I expect it to have a WHO-assigned Greek name very soon. But it just means that, you know, within a few years, it will evolve, the coronavirus will evolve to be so distant that our 1.0 Wuhan-adapted spike protein vaccines may not work. And also that also implies your previous natural immunity as well. So we have to be very careful. But in terms of virulence, we don't know if it's going to be more virulent and severe per se. Delta, by the way, I want to point out, is already 4 to 5 times more severe than the original strain in terms of risk hospitalizations if you're vaccinated or even one dose vaccinated. Right. So this is really, really already worrying. And if it's 5 times more, in terms of way, if it's more and more too severe, like 20% or 50% mortality, it becomes almost too severe for it to keep spreading. As in, if it's killed,
it becomes self-limiting.
If
then
it's host too fast, it becomes it self dies out too quickly.
Right.
So a moderately severe but highly infectious virus, which is what Delta is actually the most dangerous.
Uh huh. So we're at. And we have, I believe, just about a minute here before we're going to hit a hard break. How goes the work that you're seeing in the science with regard to adapting the vaccines to these new viruses? And, you know, or is this just going to be the new normal, what we have right now?
Well, first of all, the research says that a third shot is very effective. Very effective versus the second shot, especially if it's been more than 6 months. They're also adapting vaccines to Delta. Those are underway. And also, by the way, a new study showed that Moderna, because of the timing and the dosage, could actually be a little bit stronger than Pfizer vaccine, apples to apples, against Delta. There's been two studies that show that it is stronger than Pfizer vaccine in a head-to-head matchup. So there's lots of things that could be seen. Boosting right now is still a really great solution. Eventually, we will need Delta or other future variant adaptive vaccines, but those are always slower than getting another booster. Hopefully, we can get out of this, and by ventilating masks in addition to vaccines. Don't just rely on vaccines alone. Do all three mitigations.
There you go. Wear your mask. Wear your damn mask. Dr. Eric Feigelding on Twitter, DREICDING. Dr. Feigelding, thanks again for dropping by. Great talking with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with What's Up in Florida. Oh, my God. What are we going to do with these people? Pat in Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, Pat, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Tom, I wanted to ask you about the Supreme Court.
Sure.
Because it seems like they're more about the politics than they're about the law. Because there's a lot of things that I've been watching that they making decisions that don't seem to deal with the law.
That's true, and that's been true for most of the history of the Supreme Court. And, you know, we have this fiction, this story that we tell ourselves and that we teach our kids, that the Supreme Court is above politics because they have lifetime appointments. Same thing about federal judges. But in fact, they are always political appointees. And the right in particular, and this really began in a big way with the Reagan administration, have been, you know, being very strategic about finding, you know, young, hardcore, right-wing radicals that they can put on the court who will rule the way that they want. And it's, you know, the Supreme Court is now a full-blown political body. And now they're doing these shadow docket things where they're not even bothering to hold public hearings. They're not even bothering to hear arguments. They get a couple of briefs and they make a decision, and they, in some cases, they don't even sign them. The most recent one, the three liberals all protested, but the six conservatives who pushed it through didn't even sign their opinion. It's not a good thing or a healthy thing, Pat. And I am hopeful that when President Biden's commission that is examining the Supreme Court and our federal court system comes back in the next month or two or three, that one of the recommendations is that we expand the size of the court and that we do it quickly, because it has been taken over by right-wing crackpots, frankly.
But what about the two that that the one about molesting people, women, and then the other one where his wife was what, they can't get them off the Supreme Court?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you got Clarence Thomas, whose wife was one of the people who helped organize the Stop the Steal rally before the Capitol was attacked, apparently. And he has a long history, along with Antonin Scalia, of naked conflicts of interest that would get any federal judge thrown off a federal judgeship. Hanging out with the Koch brothers and their buddies, and all these kinds of things. And of course, Thomas's wife took hundreds of thousands of dollars from right-wing groups for her work. That would disqualify anybody. But what the Supreme Court said many years ago was that they don't have to comply with the judicial code of ethics that we impose by law on federal courts, on the rest of the federal courts. So they can do things that are nakedly political. They don't have to recuse themselves. You've got Amy Coney Barrett, whose husband is deeply in bed with some of the fossil fuel companies, ruling on cases that involve those fossil fuel companies. The list of conflicts of interest is so great and so egregious, frankly, Pat, that you could write a book about. In fact, I did. the Hidden History of the Supreme Court, The Betrayal of America. It is terrible. So spot on. Thank you for calling and identifying that. It is something that we really need to be paying attention to. Stick around. Tom Hartman here with you. COVID. So number one, if you have been bamboozled, sadly, on one of these Facebook sites or one of these other websites or whatever, by seeing, oh, hey, look at this study. This study says that it's going to be amazing that, ivermectin will save the world. It'll save millions and millions of lives. Please know that that study from that no-name journal, actually there is a name to the journal, but that study is based on a study that has been debunked and is a lie. And when you pull, and it's not even a study, it's a study of a study, or a study of studies, what's called a meta-analysis, and which is like, I'll read five books and then tell you what I think, sort of thing. And that if you reverse out of their data that Egyptian study, the one that started this whole ivermectin thing, saying, oh, this will solve the world's problems, and it turned out that the researchers had falsified their information. If you reverse that out of the one that's published over on the NIH site, what you find is that ivermectin is completely and totally useless. That all the other studies found it was useless, including the most recent one. And, it's like, I don't know how to convince people that they should pay attention to actual scientists. And they get just this little tiny fringe bit of, it looks official, it's on the NIH.gov website, and people are like, oh, I'll believe that instead of what, like, the head of the National Institute of Infectious Diseases, Anthony Fauci, has to say. Or I'll believe that instead of what, every hospital administrator and physician in the country is saying. I mean, it's just incredible. And now down in Florida, this from the Miami Herald this morning, the headline, Florida changes COVID-19 data, creating an artificial decline in recent deaths. yesterday or the day before, the Florida Department of Health had gone on a tweet storm criticizing the CDC. And then apparently DeSantis, you know, made some calls or pulled some strings or whatever. And so now, instead of counting COVID deaths at the time of death, they're waiting until they get the time of birth of death certificate, which is typically about a week later. So there's going to be this week-long pause of deaths in Florida because they've changed the way they're counting who died from COVID. It's a scam. It's just an absolute scam. Meanwhile, the Florida Department of Education announced that they are withholding money from two schools for allowing masks.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
To be completely accurate, I should say they are withholding money from two schools for mandating masks in Florida. How's this going to play out for you, DeSantis?
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
This is just incredible. Florida's Department of Education announced yesterday that they are withholding money from two school districts because the teachers and the administrators in those school districts said, we want to protect our students and ourselves. I mean, just let that sink in for a minute. These schools are being punished because they're asking children to wear masks during a pandemic. And it's not like Ron DeSantis doesn't know the kids are dying over this. I mean, we're averaging in the neighborhood of 1,000 deaths a day in the United States. Last week, there were over 150,000 new cases of COVID, the majority children. And DeSantis, you know, because it's starting to spread, you know, as we're going back to school, it's just spreading all across the country. But here's the thing. I mean, if DeSantis backs down and says, you know, or Abbott or any of these other Republican governors, Kristi Noem, what's his name down in Mississippi? If any of them back down and say, you know, I was wrong, you should wear masks. That is like, in Republican circles, a political death sentence. Democrats are, you know, allowed to say I was wrong. And do from time to time. But you can never do it. You have to be right all the time. Which in my mind reflects just a deep fundamental insecurity among both the politicians and the voters who vote for them. We want certainty. We want somebody who's always right. And so, you know, Trump will lie like a dozen times a day when he was president and to this day.
And it's like, oh, no, we have to believe everything he says because, you know, he's the great God, Donald Trump. It's amazing. It's just amazing. Anyhow, Robin in Boulder, Colorado. Hey, Robin, what's on your mind today?
Oh, I've just been listening to, you know, the last couple of days or maybe weeks about ivermectin.
You have an ivermectin story?
Yes, I do. I had horses for many years, and ivermectin is the go-to worm paste that all good, knowledgeable horse owners administer to their horses every 3 to 4 months because they're just domesticity in horses creates an awful lot of worms in their systems. And right on the label, Tom, I mean, every single person at the barn knew this label very well, where we kept horses. And it says right on the label, not intended for use in food animals, meaning that if you're going to give that to a horse or a cow that is destined for slaughter, which is a whole other thing I don't even want to discuss, you can't. They can't slaughter animals that have had this administered to them. There's a certain amount of time before it's out of the animal system because those animals are going to be consumed by humans. I mean, you would think that with a warning label like that, people would just say, oh, you know, I mean, if it's not good for food animals and I ingest this secondhand, this is not going to be good for me. How can it possibly be good by taking it firsthand? I mean, I'm just amazed over this.
Yeah.
It's shocking to me.
And
how did this get started? I mean, all of a sudden I'm hearing about ivermectin as a treatment for COVID. I'm going, where is this coming from?
Well, it's been kind of bubbling under the surface for 4 or 5 months now. You know, we've tried to avoid discussing it on this program because I just didn't want to promote it. But now, you know, the cat's out of the bag. I mean, it's all over. It's on the national media and everything. In answer to your question, though, Robin, and I think it's like that's a really important question, is where did all this get started? What we have is a political party, the Republican Party, that has absolutely internalized the message that Ronald Reagan promoted, that Fred Koch was promoting back in the day through the John Birch Society, Joe McCarthy was promoting, that you can't trust the American government. And the reason why these billionaires have, and their toadies, have been promoting this idea since the 1950s, and this started in a big way in 1955, and that date is not a coincidence. That was when the John Birch Society really went on a tear and started this campaign to impeach Earl Warren and destroy the credibility of the U.S. Supreme Court. And that was because in 1954, the Supreme Court ruled in the Brown versus Board of Education case that it is no longer legal to have schools that are segregated by race, public schools. And at that point, the white supremacists and the billionaires, and Fred Koch was at the front of that line with, you know, his involvement with the John Birch Society, started this idea that you can't trust the government. You can't trust the government. We shouldn't be giving the government all this money. You need to cut the taxes on the really rich people. Government shouldn't be passing out welfare to unworthy moochers because that always ends up poorly. That ends up bad. We should just trust, you know, billionaires and charities for all our needs, whether it's health care or housing or whatever it may be. Leave it to private industry. Leave it to the billionaires. And then this became official doctrine in the Republican Party. It was considered fringe back in the 50s. In fact, in 1956, I believe it was, Dwight Eisenhower, who was then president, wrote a letter to his brother Edgar, who was a hardcore right winger, saying, should any political party ever try to get rid of Social Security and labor unions and basically trash government, we will never hear from that party again. He said there's a few billionaires down in Texas, he was referring to the Hunt brothers at the time, who think this is possible, but their numbers are small and they are stupid. That little bit of a verbatim quote from President Eisenhower. But when Reagan was inaugurated in 1980, with the help of all this money from these billionaires that was unlocked by the Supreme Court in 1976 and 78 with the Buckley and Bilotti decisions, the ones that presaged Citizens United. They set the floor for Citizens United. Reagan was elected with all this big, big money behind him. And in his inaugural address on January 20th, 1981, his first speech to the nation as president, he said, government is not the solution to your problems. Government, in fact, is the problem. And began this whole ideology that if it comes out of the government, you can't trust it. You can only trust stuff that comes from the billionaires or from or somebody, right? And then, you know, during the Trump era, Trump found this very useful. Don't trust the government, even though he was running the government. I mean, it is ironic that Reagan was running the government, too. Governments that don't like democracy, the autocrats and oligarchs of countries like, you know, Hungary or Russia or Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates or North Korea or Iran, countries that we know are and the UAE, that we know are playing in the internet space here in the United States, pretending to be Americans, they are very enthusiastic about causing Americans not to trust their government because they want to see democracy fail. Democracy is a mortal threat to these billionaire oligarchs who have their own internal democracy movements. And if they can say, if the Saudis can say, or the Emiratis can say, or, you know, fill in the blanks, right, can say, oh, look it, American democracy doesn't work. We shouldn't be trying to imitate them. We should be putting our protesters who hold up America as a value for the world, we should be putting them in prison. And, you know, the more they can cause Americans not to trust our government, the more they succeed. That's what's going on, Robin. This is not an accident.
You know what, Tom? I can remember a time, I'm old enough to remember a time when Americans wanted to be well governed. That all changed, I guess, when Reagan got in office.
In the 1970s, the Pew Organization found that between 70 and 80% of Americans trusted the government to do the right thing. And this was, you know, post-Watergate, post-Vietnam. We still trusted the government to do the right thing. In the 60s, it was even higher than that. But now it's under 20%. And it's because of this relentless effort that has been funded by right-wing billionaires, oil companies. You know, oh, don't trust the government about global warming. We'll tell you the truth. Point after point, don't trust the government that we should ban this pesticide. It's just fine. You know, and it just goes on and on. Robin, thank you for the call. I'm sorry we're out of time. I got to run. But thank you for a very thoughtful call and your ivermectin story.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
This is no friggin' accident, any more than Donald Trump's efforts to sabotage Joe Biden, which I'll get into in the next hour, were any accident. And welcome back. Anna Marie in Bellevue, Washington. Hey, Anna Marie, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I'm a doctor in Bellevue area. I just spent part of yesterday starting dialysis on unvaccinated patients with COVID, unfortunately, most of whom will survive. I wanted to answer your question of how do we make people trust in science and in government. You just covered that. And one of the biggest ways is to have single payer. Not because I've heard of arguments, it's because people are getting sick. It's to cover everyone with no requirements, no means testing. If the government is responsible for paying for your babies delivered in your family, the care of your mother and father, the care of everything, then you will trust in government. Let me tell you a story. I saw a guy a week ago. He's on dialysis. He was working and had a snowboarding injury and developed kidney failure. But even though he can't work and he's on Medicaid, but even he's on government assistance for his dialysis, he is what you called an unworthy moocher. He thinks he's an unworthy moocher. But if everybody got single payer and care from the very beginning, there wouldn't be any unworthy moochers. It would be for everybody. So that's why we need single payer, is for trust in government.
That was brilliant, Anna Marie. And I do recall, it's been a couple of years, but there were some studies done found that people generally trust their health insurance companies. You know, which I think is making your point. If the entity is paying for all your medical expenses and you get well, you tend to trust them.
Yeah, but the problem is it has to be everyone. As I said, this gentleman who's on dialysis because of a snowboarding injury, he trusts the deep state cabal, but he does not trust the government, even though they're providing and paying for his dialysis, because he sees himself as unworthy, even though he's sick. Yeah. He needs care, but he thinks he's mooching off the government because that's what he was taught when he worked and ran his own business. So it has to be everyone. We have to include everyone.
Yeah, I agree that healthcare should be a right. I think housing should be a right as well, as it is in most other developed, and education, higher education, as it is in most other developed countries. As a physician in Washington State, are you finding that among your patients that there is any sort of, you know, are people talking about this, about single-payer health care, about Medicare for all? Or, I mean, I talked to my doctor about it, and he's outspokenly in favor of it. But, you know, is this, or is that discussion not even happening really in a big way on the ground, as it were?
The discussion has changed. Before the pandemic, I'd say 80% of my patients supported single payer, even those on Medicare, even those on private insurance. But Susan Delbeny, who's a wonderful congresswoman for the area I work in, told me personally that her constituents are not ready for it. I disagree. Now the conversation has changed to huge amounts of frustration with those who are unvaccinated. And I hope we don't, the whole move seems to punish these people, make them pay more, have them pay more, which will only push them further away,
right.
Cover everyone. So that's what the conversation is about now. And it's so frustrating. I'm seeing people, 18-year-olds, 20s, 30s, 40s in the hospital. We're just being overwhelmed. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, amazing. Anna Marie, thank you. Thank you for the call and the reality check. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And thanks for listening to KBCS. Tom Harbin here with you. Terry in Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Terry, what's up?
I just wanted to comment and ask. So we see Ron DeSantis withholding money from school districts who are just trying to keep students and staff safe. Then we find out he's invested in Regeneron. So it's like, go ahead and get sick, then use this expensive treatment, you know, which will, you know, line his pockets. Do you think there's more to explain this blatant attack on which, you know, we assume that it should be the universal desire that everybody wants the health and well-being of our humans and our citizens? And is there, you know, do you think there's other connections to agendas, including money, that would explain these just completely baffling actions that he's taking, and not just him, but other Republicans?
I doubt it's money, frankly, Terry. I think that, number one, DeSantis himself is not invested in Regeneron. The hedge fund or fund or whatever it's called that is run by or owned by one of his largest donors is a major investor or an investor, shall we say, in Regeneron. I don't know if it's one of the biggest. So it's kind of two steps removed. And I wrote an op-ed about this in which I said, you know, if DeSantis really wanted to make money for his investor friends, you know, Ken Buck is this guy's name, then all he has to do is accept Medicaid expansion and let Ken Buck invest in a hospital chain. You know, more people in Florida would suddenly have health care and they'd be showing up at the doctor. So I don't think that it's the money. I think that what has happened is that the Republican Party has so internalized this message that you can't trust government. That has been being sold to us since the 1970s by right-wing billionaires and their foundations, that the GOP base has so internalized that message that DeSantis and then, of course, Donald Trump declared war on Anthony Fauci. Anthony Fauci is the face of, the Biden administration's efforts to stop COVID. And so DeSantis has to go after Fauci. Thus, you know, he's selling, you know, campaign literature, campaign goodies, you know, little signs and things that say, don't Fauci my Florida and stuff like that. I think it's this tribalism. I think it's just this, he just can't go back. And what's going to be real interesting is to see, and we're probably not going to know until next November, but to see whether this bet, this very high stakes bet that DeSantis and Abbott in particular have made, as well as a couple of other Republican governors. This bet that if they intentionally allow hundreds of children and thousands of adults to die unnecessarily in their states, that they will be rewarded by the Republican base for that. And then the other part of this, how this is going to play out, if, let's say, DeSantis gets, you know, rewarded by the Republican base in that he wins the primary for the 2022 run for governor of Florida, will he be able to win the general election? Or for that matter, if he does and he wins the presidential primary in 2024 on the GOP side, again, because the base, it doesn't care who dies, will he be able to take on, you know, presumably Kamala Harris or Joe Biden? And I think those are all very open questions right now. But
it's just insane.
Yeah,
really, what a high sacrifice for the, you know, for that kind of an agenda.
It really is. It really is. It's not, I mean, almost literally insane, like psychopathic, like letting people die. Terry, thank you for the call. Patricia in Burlington, Kentucky. Hey, Patricia, what's up?
Nothing. Thanks for answering my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to add something to what the lady had said in the prior call, not right before me, but before that. I've been thinking about this for a while, and one of my thoughts is that while I have no empathy or sympathy for these people who just keep spouting off lies, I just wonder if some of the hesitancy of the vaccine and all of that stuff isn't partially because, as a whole, we've been so screwed by our medical community as far as Big Pharma and, you know, the doctors getting in bed with Big Pharma. And, you know, I've had several instances myself where I'm like, okay, now what is this? Mm-hmm. Is this because they want money, or is this, you know, because they really need me to do this for my health? And I just think that there's something more to that than we're maybe given it credit for, because I'm like you, I'm the first person to say, oh no, they're just in the Trumpster cult, you know. But that's what I wanted to say.
It's an interesting theory, and I think there's probably something to it, Patricia, because the average American, you know, the average American family is spending $3,000 a year more for health care than any other country on earth, any other developed country on earth. And so we're getting screwed, and we know it. And we also pay twice as much for drugs. And now we've got the big pharma companies advertising on TV that allowing Medicare to negotiate drugs is going to take away your drugs if you're on Medicare, which is a complete lie.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. So it makes sense that people are starting to go, well, who do I trust? But and so who do you turn to? Well, you should turn to the experts that are employed by government. But we've got 50 years now of right-wing billionaires telling us, don't trust government. They just want to raise taxes on billionaires, and they just want to regulate big fossil fuel companies so that they, you know, can't spout poisons. And that, we don't want that. That's not a good thing.
Right.
And so.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a mixed message
The perfect phrase. Yes, it is a very mixed message. Patricia, thank you. I think you may be onto something. It's kind of all of this stuff, in my opinion. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax. the way car buying should be.
On the line with us is our old friend Lori Wallach, the executive director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Tradewatch.org is the website, and well worth book noting and signing up for their updates. Lori's personal Twitter handle is Wallach Lori, WallachLori, and the one for Trade Watch is PCGTW, as in Public Citizen Global Trade Watch, PCGTW on Twitter. At tradewatch.org on the internet. Lori, welcome back. We have talked, you and I, on numerous occasions about the so-called TRIPS waivers, and I think it's an important time to revisit that and find out where we're at with that. We, in the first hour of the program today, we were talking with Dr. Eric Feigelding, who's an epidemiologist, former faculty member of Harvard Medical School, and he was talking about how, you know, important it is that we get essentially the world vaccinated. The principal barrier to this seems to be patent law. Tell us about it.
So the TRIPS waiver stands for the Agreement on Trade-Related Intellectual Property. It's one part of the WTO, where Big Pharma got rules into a so-called free trade agreement, obliging 160 countries to guarantee Big Pharma monopoly control for 20 years over not just patents, but also copyrights and industrial designs, exclusive data, all of which adds up, Tom, to meaning that right now Big Pharma and the handful of makers of effective vaccines have total control over whether more or enough are made, where they're made, what price, what sale, in the face of the worst global health crisis in 100 years. Basically, these rules mean a handful of price-gouging pharmaceutical corporations are making it such that there simply are not enough vaccines being made to end the pandemic.
Right. And we heard from Dr. Feigelding this morning that, you know, there's now a new variant beyond Delta that apparently is popping up out of, in South Africa, the most mutated so far. We really need to vaccinate the world to get this done. Who is blocking, and my understanding from our previous conversations, Lori Wallach, is that the majority of the countries in the world want to produce this so-called TRIPS waiver. They want to sign off on this thing that will guarantee these pharmaceutical companies that they will make money when the drugs that they have developed are being manufactured in third world countries and distributed, you know, more broadly. They just won't make as much money. But where is the roadblock? Where is the barrier?
Well, first, let me just say something very concrete so folks can wrap their heads around what we're talking about. Getting the entire world vaccinated, as your previous guest said, as you're saying, is the way for us to stop the pandemic. There is no plan now to stop the pandemic. And perversely, it's probably in Big Pharma's interest to have wave after wave of variant for which they'll have to create booster after booster. If we want to get our lives back, the whole world needs to get vaccinated, and that's going to take 14 to 15 billion doses. The current companies promised they would have 12 billion this year. Here we are in the ninth month, and they don't have 5 billion out the door, so they're not going to cut it. They haven't been cutting it. They can't make enough. And under these monopoly controls, as you've just said, other companies that are willing to pay the creators of the vaccine are just simply forbidden from making more doses, even if they pay the originators. So this is a death spiral scenario. And the great news is in May, President Biden reversed President Trump's opposition to this waiver. The waiver basically like unlocks the door and gets us on the path to making more vaccines. The gate is slammed, the intellectual property is monopolized, is constrained. So there are now about 140 countries that want to do this. And at this point, it's literally Germany getting the entire European Union to block the will of 140 other countries. But also, the Biden administration hasn't really stepped up to lead in the 4 months since they announced that they were supporting. So the Biden administration needs to lead. The Germans need to get the heck out of the way, and we can get this done and more vaccines made.
What are the, Laurie, we're talking with Laurie Wallach, the executive director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, tradewatch.org. Where are the pressure points that the average person, you know, folks listening to this program can push? Is it a matter of contacting our members of Congress at 202-224-3121, you know, calling your member of the House or your senator? Is it a matter of contacting the White House, you know, at whitehouse.gov, I think it is. There's a form you can fill out. Is it a matter of calling your state representatives? You know, how can we most effect, and obviously go to tradewatch.org. You know, you may not want to say it, but I will. You know, go to tradewatch.org and learn what you can and sign up to help in any way you can. But where how can we bring maximum pressure to make this happen? We need to vaccinate the world, Laurie, as you know.
Yep, absolutely. And here's the good news, Tom. This is totally doable. This is a political problem, not a technical problem. Thank goodness we've got the ability to beat this pandemic. Now we have to create the political will. So where it needs to happen is with the White House. And there are two concrete things folks can do. I always suggest folks should call their members of the House of Representatives and their two senators. And again, the number you gave is the Capitol switchboard. Folks, all you need to do is give your zip code and they'll connect you to your House member. Then ask that House member's office to send you back to the switchboard. One call and you can get connected right away to all three, both senators and your House member. And tell them you want a letter or an email sent back to confirm what your senators and your House member are doing to get the Biden administration to step up on global vaccines with, one, the waiving of the WTO intellectual property barriers. Two, funding and pushing our allies to join us in funding more factories around the world to use that access to the intellectual property and make more shots. It's a 1-2 punch. Now, the second thing to do, though, which we've made super easy, is there's actually a person in the Biden administration who's supposed to be doing this. And this is a guy named Jeff Zients. He is the global COVID czar. And we need to all tell him, if he doesn't get these pharma monopolies suspended now, this TRIPS waiver, the pandemic will never end. It's his job to make the damn plan. So if you go to tradewatch.org and you can sign up for action, you can sign up a petition that now already has tens of thousands of people on it. Organizations, health organizations, human rights organizations, labor organizations, basically telling the COVID czar, Jeff Zients, you're representing the president, get your buns in gear.
How do you spell his last name? This is a guy who I didn't even know existed.
Z-I-E-N-T-S. Jeffrey Zients.
Uh-huh. And he works out of the White House. And how do we speak to him?
So he's a very secretive guy. He's been dodging Congress, but we've been able to figure out a way to get petitions basically flooding into him. So if you go to tradewatch.org and you land on that first page, you see sign up for action. And you can sign up right there on this petition to Zients, of which tens of thousands of people are signing, because lots of major organizations are doing it. And we're just going to flood that guy and have Congress also pressuring him so that, you know, he does his job and gets this plan in place.
And then he's the one who leans on Biden to say, OK, it's time, boss, pull the switch or whatever.
Well, and with the UN Global Assembly coming up, another thing is, folks, if you're listening in New York City, there's going to be a big rally protest on the 20th right at the UN to push Biden and the other global leaders to make the choice to end the pandemic.
September
20th. This is a leadership thing, and your voice can help.
Got it. Laurie Wallach, tradewatch.org. Thank you, Laurie.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Laurie is so good. Trade Watch. They do such great work. It is such a great website. And Ralph Nader created this thing. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Alejandro in Miami. Hey, Alejandro, what's on your mind today?
Yes, I wanted to make a point about the ivermectin thing. It just seems to be another stupid drug trend among these anti-vaxxer idiots. And I'm just curious, what is the origin of these ivermectin drug nonsense. Like, who's pushing this? Are doctors behind this somehow? And if they are, why isn't anyone filing complaints against their medical boards for this? This is irresponsible, just like those stupid frontline doctors, that they should not have any more, they should not have medical licenses. We need to go after those quack doctors and other so-called doctors who push this nonsense, because they need to suffer the consequences of their misinformation. So I just, you know, want to, I guess, throw that at you and see what your thoughts were on that.
I think you've asked the $64,000 question, Alejandro. What little I know about this is that there was a so-called study submitted for publication by a group in Egypt and submitted for publication to a scientific journal. And in some cases, you publish these in what are called preprint journals, which is where they have not been peer-reviewed. And it's just like an early look at, you know, promising research. Within days of this being published in this obscure little kind of corner of the internet, it was debunked. They discovered, number one, that the large chunks of the language in it had been plagiarized from other studies, the scientific sounding pieces, bits and pieces of it, number one. Number two, they could find no record of the actual, you know, drug being administered to people and people being measured for safety and efficacy. In other words, there was no study. And number three, they just, you know, the numbers and therefore the conclusions were just made up. And the study was withdrawn. It was, you know, it didn't even get as far as peer review. The people behind it were discredited. Now, the question that you're raising, which I don't know the answer to, is who were those people behind it? What was their motivation? Were they just, you know, was it just some teenagers trying to see if they could get something out there? Was it some foreign government that's trying to mess with us or the world? I mean, what possible benefit, or, you know, was it some company that makes ivermectin? I think that's the least probable, because it's not a drug that is under patent any longer, so it's generic and it's, you know, ubiquitous. It's all over the world. You know, or is it possible that it was even, you know, somebody who just didn't know how to do a study well, who had the best of intentions? We don't, or at least I don't know the answer to those questions. And if any of you listening know the answer to those questions, you know, let me know. And there, you know, you can reach me, probably Twitter is the easiest way to reach me. So number one. But then number two, once that study, even after it was withdrawn, you know, the study that I was mentioning earlier, where I've, you know, I'm hearing from people, oh, over at the National Institutes of Health, there's a study about ivermectin. And it's a study of studies, right? And that study of studies includes a study of the original study that was debunked. And so, therefore, hey, it shows that maybe this stuff works. Well, that's because you're basing your statistics on a lie. And you know how to study that as a lie. And it's just like it's taken on a life of its own. And it's taken on a life of its own among these people who are these tribal true believers of Donald Trump, who, oddly enough, is not taking ivermectin. He took the vaccine. But, you know, but he did it in secret. You know, it took 2 months for us to find out that Trump and his wife and son had all been vaccinated. So, yeah. But I think you've asked the big question, and I hope that we eventually find out the answer. Alejandro, thank you for the call. Kirk in Lakeland, Florida. Hey, Kirk, thanks for listening to WMNF. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for your program. To be concise, I'm a medical device distributor. Last year, when COVID really started taking hold, we got a lot of requests for devices, masks, tests, things like that. My point of this story is that 2 weeks ago, I had a customer looking for a number of masks. So we went searching with my friend and I, and we were presented with these masks from Hanes. And I said,
Hanes, underwear company?
Yes. And so if people don't know this, I said, that's really strange. So there's a story behind it. I found out that Jared Kushner got in behind Hanes, had them produce masks for every man, woman, and child in the U.S., and they were supposed to be sent out. Now,
oh, yeah, the Postal Service was going to distribute them. That was in March of last year, and then they canceled that in April after the April 7th headline that black people were dying out of proportion to white people. That's when everything changed.
Well, it turns out that it also sounds like that they produced a mask and it didn't, by all appearances, look like a jockstrap on your face, and that's what the comments were. the more disturbing part about this, Tom, is really this. These masks are being sold on the market for pennies on the dollar because they never got used. Now, my question is...
So they got dumped into some sort of surplus market.
Yeah, but is the taxpayer on the hook for those Hanes masks? Because if they are, then they're being resold again. And who's... And I don't understand that, because it seems like the taxpayer owns it.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I recalled and reported on and have written about the you know, when Kushner was taking this seriously in February and March of last year, he had cut this deal. I didn't know it was Hanes, but he had cut a deal to have masks. In fact, I thought he was going to import them from China. But anyhow, he had these masks, and they were going to mail them. And the U.S. Postal Service, Louis DeJoy was in on this, the U.S. Postal Service was going to distribute 5 masks to every family in America. That was the deal, if I'm remembering correctly. What I didn't know is that they had actually been made, which means that they were almost certainly paid for. So I'm guessing that they just got dumped into a surplus market. But there's a story for some intrepid reporter to run down. That's a fascinating one.
And my other last point was that, you know, I was speaking with one of my friends yesterday, and we were just talking, because I live in Florida, and we were talking about the treatment, I can't remember, the monoclonal antibody treatment that the governor is professing to use. And when we were talking about that, it basically says, you know, no prescription needed, come in, you can get it anytime. And you and I have said, you know, the taxpayer is likely on the hook for this bill. But then the other side of that, too, is that, you know, I don't know if people know anything about stem cell science or anything like that. But, you know, I know there was a real big pushback against stem cell science years ago by the evangelicals. And there's a clear, Regeneron has a clear statement about their use of, you know, stem cells in their treatment. And so I do think it's a bit of irony, too, where...
Well, that's interesting.
Evangelicals...
they're hysterical because one of the vaccines was, you know, tested for whether it was dangerous to human cells on a cell line, on an aborted cell line at one point or very early in the development process. But they're fine with Regeneron. You know, I mean, they're shoveling it out the door down there in Florida that was similarly tested.
Yeah, the procurement of stem cells is an interesting thing. You can watch it because I had another company that sold it as well, and essentially they're using third party consenting mothers. Whatchamacallit? They're using the placenta, and so what they do is they harvest cells from the placental tissue. But you should watch it. The mechanical, it's basically just cutting the thing up.
Yeah.
And making it into small enough particles, desiccating it, and then making it into another formulation. But it's an interesting thing, again, where, you know, we were totally against stem cell science, but now it's saving lives. And listen, I am not against that. Yeah. I think that Regeneron is fine. I just think that it's just weird when people don't...
Yeah, we're very selective in our outrage here. Kirk, thank you. Fascinating stuff.
You've been listening to Tom Hartmann. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartmann.com.